Please listen carefully.
Hello, world. Welcome to the Optimist Daily Update. I'm Christy Jansen.
And I'm Summers McKay.
We are part of the team behind the Optimist Daily, making solutions the news. We bring you reader-funded solutions news every day in order to change the tenor of news media and the direction of your day to one focused on solutions.
6 days a week, we publish positive news stories written by award-winning journalists and delivered online to your inbox and through our social channels. And now we are sharing these solutions in a commute-worthy, walk-worthy, oh my God, it's Wednesday-worthy, home office-worthy, will the baby please nap-worthy podcast. Today is Wednesday, April 8th, 2020.
And here are today's top solutions.
All right, first, before I start reading, I'm going to fess up. Christy and I just recorded half the podcast without actually pressing the record button. So we're doing this for a second time, and I think we're feeling a little Wednesday loopy. But there is some good news to think about. From the health section of the Optimist Daily, study finds plasma from coronavirus survivors can help severely ill patients in health. Good news in the battle against coronavirus. In a recent story published in The Guardian, it was reported that doctors have found tentative evidence that seriously ill coronavirus patients can benefit from infusions of blood plasma collected from people who have recovered from the disease. Two teams of medics working at separate hospitals in China gave antibody-rich plasma to 15 severely ill patients and recorded striking improvements in many of them. In one study, doctors in Wuhan gave convalescent plasma to 10 severely ill patients and found that the virus levels in their bodies dropped rapidly. Within 3 days in this pilot study, the doctors saw improvements in the patient's symptoms, ranging from shortness of breath and chest pains to fever and coughs. Although a larger randomized trial is needed to confirm the findings, the treatment could serve as a promising rescue operation for severely ill patients. In the other study, a team of doctors led by Lei Lu from Shenzhen Third People's Hospital gave convalescent plasma to 5 critically ill patients. All showed improved symptoms after the infusions, and within 10 days, 3 patients were able to come off the ventilators that had been keeping them alive, according to a preliminary report in the Journal of American Medical Association. The findings raise hopes that donated blood from recently recovered patients could be used to boost the immune systems of the more vulnerable people and help them fight the infection. The small number of patients means it's impossible to know how much benefit the treatment really brings, but the findings do show promise about the power of plasma from coronavirus survivors. And I am so excited, Christy, by this and other news that is coming out of our phenomenal medical researchers and the biotech that's coming out of this, because there is hope on the horizon.
And I think this is really important. As I was sharing with you earlier, Summers, my sister, who's a nurse in the LA metro area, is likely positive for coronavirus and has got all the symptoms of the COVID-19 disease right now. She's struggling. She's been ill for about 8 days, and she was tested yesterday, and hopefully they'll know something later. But it can be very scary, and she's doing okay for the moment, but it sounds like an awful, awful disease. And these kinds of studies, even though right now it's small and it's early news, I think keeping track of them is really important. And it does give us some hope that they will find clinical treatments for this disease that will help those critically ill patients recover quickly.
Absolutely. And your sister is in my prayers, Christy.
Thank you, Summers. All right. Well, in something a little bit lighter from the art section of the Optimist Daily, I want to talk a little bit about the research-backed mental health benefits of making mediocre art. If your social media feeds are filled with photos of banana bread, rudimentary watercolor paintings, and beginner sewing projects, it may be more than just people acting out of boredom. They're likely getting other benefits from these efforts, too. Creative practices can offer a buffer against stress and anxiety, says Girija Kaimal, an associate professor in Drexel University's Creative Arts Therapies PhD program and president-elect of the American Art Therapy Association. Creating things, especially in the face of uncertainty, fear, or other distressing and unsettling emotions, is an innate human drive, she says. Kaimal is not alone in believing that the de-stressing power of art can be powerful. In 2016, a study in the Journal of Positive Psychology found that practicing simple creative arts on a regular basis can give you a psychological boost. Before that, a 2010 review of more than 100 studies of art's impact on health revealed that pursuits like music, writing, dance, painting, pottery, drawing, and photography all improve medical outcomes, mental health, social networks, and positive identity. It was published in the American Journal of Public Health. And it's not just art. Activities like cooking, baking, and gardening were linked to more positive well-being, according to research published in the Journal of Happiness in 2018. Okay, so art can give you a mental health boost, but you're asking probably, what if your art is mediocre at best? The answer is simple. There's no need to worry about that. Grief counselor Mary Potter Kenyon says that the thing that stops many people from embracing a creative practice is a fear of just starting or not being very good at it, which is entirely an unnecessary worry. It isn't about how good your art is. It's about putting your hands and mind to the task of creating something and experiencing your brain as it gets into a creative flow. And Summers, I love this because it really is about the practice of doing something and being creative that brings you those positive de-stressing hormones. And I am a true believer in this, and I've experienced it many times.
This article makes me smile because I am no artist when it comes to painting or drawing, but I am a collage queen, and that is my version of art. And I recently joined a Facebook group about gardening here on the Central Coast. Everyone is so excited to share their little teeny tiny gardening projects. And we all feel like we are, you know, curating Versailles, right? But it's just, I love this post. So you don't have to be great. Just make art.
No, just make art. And it's all about just doing it. It's not about having something that's a masterpiece.
It's interesting because in addition to participating in some positive channels on social media, we have observed some really negative and aggressive behavior on social media in this past week at The Optimist Daily. And something that we observe as we post and share stories is the way people react. And we kind of had a hypothesis that people would begin to go through the five stages of grief as our country and our world looked at facing this coronavirus pandemic. So we tasked our staff writers to go in and see if there was some correlation. And this next story from the health section, I think, is a really brilliant breakdown of the five stages of grief, which you might be experiencing yourself as we go through coronavirus. COVID-19 and the five stages of grief. We are grieving as a nation and as a world. In the very literal sense, we are grieving the thousands of lives lost to COVID-19, but we are also grieving the loss of our normal lives, the loss of work, school, eating out, hugs with friends, travel, and so much more. Assessing our current situation using the five stages of grief can help us better process and understand the complex and wide-ranging emotions we all have about this global pandemic. The first stage of grief is denial. When the crisis began, we told ourselves that it would not be severe where we lived, that it was no worse than the common flu, that young people were not affected. Many of us attempted to continue on with our lives in some semblance of normalcy. Denying the intense feelings that accompany death and disease gives us an initial way of coping with them. We are in shock, so we tell ourselves the only issue is not real and that it can't affect us. However, as reality sets in and shock begins to fade, we're confronted with the truth of the situation. The second stage, which I think a lot of people seem to be in these days, is anger. Frustrated customers at the grocery store, aggressive language posted to online platforms, and even confrontation with friends and relatives are all symptoms of this second stage. Anger is normal. You may have lost many of the aspects of normal life you enjoy and value. It's okay to feel angry, but eventually we must track down the source of anger and let it fade into eventual grief. The third stage is bargaining. As we come to terms with sadness and loss, it is normal to begin asking ourselves what we could have done or could do differently to change the situation. If only we'd closed the borders sooner or made more medical supplies or washed our hands more. These if-only statements cannot change what has already happened. Don't dwell on the potentials of the past, but rather focus on the tangible positive changes you can make for the future. The fourth stage, a darker stage, is depression. Grief and sadness are normal. We have lost our way of life, our physical human connection, and maybe even a loved one. If you're feeling really low, acknowledge these emotions and know that you are not alone in feeling them. There are a lot of great support groups and other ways to communicate through family and friends to help you get through the depression phase. And the final stage is acceptance. This is not to be confused with being fine or happy. Acceptance simply means that you've come to terms with what has happened and are ready to act for the future in the best way you know how. When it comes to COVID-19, maybe this looks like accepting that you feel down and overwhelmed, but knowing the best you can do right now is to use precautions, follow CDC guidelines, and help others where you can, and support those that you love. And at The Optimist Daily, we are here for you through the stories that we're telling. Our writers are paying attention to things that can give you some positive reactions. And we really want you guys on our community on theoptimistdaily.com and through our social channels just to keep in touch with us and let us know how you're doing.
Yeah, and this is a great reminder, Summers, that this is just something that all of us are going to be going through. I mean, there's grief about loss of life, but there's also, you know, the loss of our freedom, the loss of our normal routines, which can be very disconcerting. And it's hard to hang on to feeling positive when it feels dark and lonely. And we don't have our normal outlets for hugging or connecting with other people, which normally, for me at least, really keeps me centered and feeling happy.
Well, and yesterday I was really straightforward with you that I was feeling pretty low and pretty frustrated and sad at the loss of routine, sad that I couldn't comfort my daughter while I had to work, sad at, you know, just the fact that I want to make a bigger difference than I can. And just expressing that to you and sharing it with you helped my day feel a little better.
Me too. These mornings are invaluable to me, Summers, right now. Our check-ins are what keeps my days going. And I think everybody could use a good check-in with a friend like we have, which is great. Yeah. All right. Well, our next story is from our design category on The Optimist Daily. And this is another solution story. Architecture Studio makes its reusable face shield model an open source. The urgency to tackle the increasing shortage of personal protective equipment, or PPE, has given rise to numerous heartwarming initiatives from people and companies from all backgrounds to step forward and come up with solutions. Architects and designers are not falling behind in this honorable quest. Architecture Studio, Foster Plus Partners, has designed a laser-cut face shield to protect health workers from coronavirus, which can be quickly disassembled and sanitized so that it can be reused after wearing. The masks are fabricated from plastic using a laser cutting machine, as Foster Plus Partners believes this is faster than 3D printing components. Each face shield is made out of three parts, which can be cut within 30 seconds and assembled in under a minute using one cutting machine. The designers can manage to cut and assemble 1,000 face shields in a single day. These masks have now been distributed to health workers in London to test, while the design and material specifications have been made open source, enabling others with a laser cutter to go on and fabricate the model. And again, Summers, this is one of those innovations which is coming out of this crisis. While it has practical applications for right now and today, it will have longer implications as we move forward. And the whole concept of being generous with a new design and making it open source instead of having proprietary control over it shows that people are coming to this with open hearts and realizing we are all in this together and we have to come up with solutions as a nation or as a world to really make a difference.
It's a very inspiring story, and we see a lot of these right now. So that open source solution mindset, we welcome at The Optimist Daily. Now, changing totally from the coronavirus into one of my favorite subjects and Christy's too, the ocean. Our last solution today is from the science section of The Optimist Daily. Scientists finally have a method for calculating the age of whale sharks. The whale shark is the biggest known fish in the ocean, but until recently, scientists weren't quite sure how long these spotted giants lived for. A new study used carbon-14 from atomic bomb tests during the 1950s and 60s to finally determine the age of these ocean dwellers. Carbon-14 is a radioactive material that decays at a steady rate. It occurs naturally and is present in all living things on Earth. But atomic bomb testing caused a surge in its prevalence all over the world in the mid-20th century. Shark vertebrae grow in rings, much like tree trunks. And by analyzing levels of carbon-14 in whale shark vertebrae, the researchers from the Australian Institute of Marine Science were able to determine that they grow by one ring each year, rather than every 6 months as previously thought. Using this method, the team was able to successfully date one whale shark to 50 years old. Some scientists have estimated that the sharks could live up to be 100 years old. Only time and analysis of more deceased fish will tell us how long these great animals can truly live. Having a clear picture of population age and growth is critical for species conservation. Without a complete understanding of population demographics, it is difficult to design an effective species management strategy. This newer and more accurate technique for whale shark dating will help scientists all over the world preserve these fish for generations to come. And that's a lighter note to end our stories on today.
And that's a great story. I grew up sailing, and seeing whale sharks is one of those highlights of a day if we got the opportunity to see these majestic, slow-moving giants in the ocean. They really are majestic creatures. All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to the Optimist Daily Update. We promise to continue to share positive, solution-based stories with ideas on how you can participate in this changing world and ensure that it is changed for the good. We promise to cover current events with accuracy, legitimate sources, and to offer you the information needed most to chart new paths for all of us.
Consider becoming an emissary on theoptimistdaily.com, and for just $5 a month, support reader-funded independent journalism. Be part of the solution, changing consciousness and addressing our world's biggest challenges with a problem-solving mindset. And if you've gotten all the way to the end of this podcast, we'd really appreciate if you subscribe wherever you're listening, and feel free to leave a comment on how the Optimist Daily Update is improving your day.
Thank you, Summers, and thank you, everybody, for listening. See you tomorrow.